Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with MSDN Architect Advisor Joel Kemper. Joel is the top authority in architecture. Joel, thank you for coming in today to share your deep insights with the audience.
Oh, really, thank you very much, Stephen. It's really my honor. I was really honored when you invited me. So. And speaking about authority, you are one, so that's and I really enjoy your insight, and I enjoy sharing with you today.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, you bring a lifetime of proven experience to our audience. Considering your impossible schedule, we thank you for doing this interview with us. Can you profile how you got to your present position in your career?
Yes, sure. I graduated back in 1994. I was a mathematician, so at that time, no computer. I was a pure math guy, and I was hired on campus by IBM, IBM Canada. So it's a while ago. I was hired in the OS2 team, so doing some recs at that time and everything. So I always been into development and logical operational model and everything. And I've been hired into OS2, and it was, must admit, now with background, we all know what happened to OS2. And then one day in IBM, the OS2 team was, most of us went to the Java team. And in fact, back at the time, it was the job that no one wanted because it was really new. So I joined the Webster group. So the Java group. So I was one of the first employees in that group, and I started working on G2E and development. So I did a long time on that, doing several roles, architect, pre-sale, technical support, and at the end became an integration architect. Mainly my three last year at IBM before I left were about firefighting. So I was really going into project and helping resolve solution, proving product were not involved. That was my role. Then after that, several things happened, several change happened, and I joined Microsoft. So it's a little bit more than 1 year ago. I really wanted to it was all the technical aspect. I really wanted to bridge the user inside this IT journey, if we may say. So and I was feeling a lack of business alignment. In that, and that's why I became an architect for MSDN, for Eastern Canada.
You know, you have this incredible background, and I want to mine into that or sort of delve into that background in a sense and use your experience and expertise. Can you give your viewpoints on what is the current state of SOA?
Sure. Wow, that is probably the best question to start a debate. So, in fact, from what I see is there is as many answers that there is people, but there is some stuff that are underlying always the same. For my point of view, my experience, I think that we tend to forget too much the A in SOA. And that's in adoption, that's really a problematic in understanding. I am a big lover, you know my mathematician background, I am a big lover of linguistic and stuff like that. It may seem dumb when I say that, but we really didn't invent the word service in IT, or neither we invent architecture. And I think that we need to remember that. And sometime it kind of became a marketing hype, like ESB portal. So if we look at the state and where I see people, if you remember either Microsoft I/O or Gartner a maturity model or whatever, I think that in this way most people are maybe into basic to advanced. The majority of the crowd being standardized on SOA. I think it's not new for C. I think it's what's new today is the heterogeneity of the platform available, and where those services are implemented. If you look at that, I'm a big fan of the fourth tenet of service orientation into design, and that help into adoption. So I think that it's really the same stuff that we were doing back in the Kix time with the, you remember the ACID stuff that we were doing. I think it's really that. It's not a new new. It's really a way to work on that. And I'm positive because today when I go to place, I start to see projects that move toward that. Architecture, infrastructure that can support virtualization of service, that support loose coupling of things, separation of concern. I start to see that, and people don't realize, but mentality change, and I think we're getting there. And I often see people say, wait a minute, this is service oriented. So and I think we're getting there.
How do you see this tying into things like software plus services?
I think it's very interesting. I think it's a way is architecture. It's all about the way you structure your stuff. It's all about componentization. So it's really, and you can feel the developer background in me, solution architect. Just I see it as the way you separate your different Lego blocks. After that, there is other major area. I see that now you have your block, your piece, your services. How do you make them available? And then I see software for services with all the component in it, mainly SaaS, software as a service, being a way to deliver those services that you made available seamlessly into the cloud, either inside your enterprise or outside, but it's seamless. So you're just delivering a service through SaaS. And then after that, you got all this Web 2.0 story that is all about consuming those services and composite application and making sense out of those services. I see that SOA, in a sense, is the way you component that, and it's really underlying into that model.
You know, again, because of your background, what do you see as the major interoperability challenges in their solutions?
First on that, I want to say that from my experience, I see that a lot of people, interoperability, again, with linguistic, it's a word that exists outside of IT. And if you look at interoperability, either you go on Wikipedia or whatever, you're going to find out that interoperability relate to every discipline. And I think in IT, because what's really interesting for us, we tend to confuse it with portability. It had this debate back in, when I was a G2E architect, where we thought that having an application that could run on 2 or 3 platforms was interoperable, but it's not really the sense. I think that there is several type of interoperability inside IT. Like, for example, depending on your background, I think interoperability for database guys are all about schema. Interoperability for, let's say, for a user or about Word format or Excel, or and interoperability for an application guy, that's more my background, is more going to be around conceptual, semantic interoperability. What I really like to explain it on the challenge is the definition by the IEEE is the ability of two system or two component to exchange message and use the information that has been exchanged. And I think that describes it all. The challenge is to build those components so they can exchange message in a format we can understand. And that's where we have the challenge, because when we implement stuff, we go in compiler type and everything, and that's where there's a challenge. So interoperability is way tied to XSD and schema and everything. It's based to the ability of this message to be transferred. My personal preference on that is really to stick close to XSD and everything around this.
You know, from your extensive work, what insights can you give that would be of value to the audience?
From what I would say is, from what I learned, and I must admit it's been long. So I had a time when I was really geeky, until I realized I learned a lot from my errors, and I did a lot of that. And one thing I learned through the time is good enough is really important. And I think in IT, sometimes we have tends to plan for everything. Let's say it could change this and that, and we try to kind of over-plan everything. But the reality is, and that's good, but the reality is that more and more today it's going fast, and with the heterogeneity of platform, the reality is that vendor support for every platform, so whether it's Oracle, Microsoft, they all have life cycle embedded into their development. And this life cycle is fast. It's 3 to 5 year extended support if you go with some vendors 10 years, but it's mainly 3 to 5 years. So this means that you need to take that, and this is where good enough come into play. So you need to really not over design. That's really something I learned. So good enough, sometimes it may not be the perfect solution, but it do the job, and then it's going to evaluate. Good enough design is fundamental. Another very important thing I learned when I was young, back at IBM, the architect I was working with used to call that the nuclear bomb design. I don't have a better way of explaining it, but it seems that we tend to be technocentric when we think of stuff, and it was always bringing us back to, no, we're doing that on paper. Let's say there is an atom bomb that clean every byte that can pass on a wire. How can we do that on paper? And it ended up that most of the design done this way are easy to scale, are easy to implement, are really good. So that I think that this is really something important today that I apply in every architecture. I tend to try not to go technical. I always think paper. I think that that's maybe the two main stuff that underline some of the stuff there. Obviously, there is several other, but...
What are your recommended best practices?
I think that my recommended best practices are get mentors. I think that it's fundamental to get a mentor. At all stage, and you need several mentors. I don't say one mentor. For example, Stephen, I subscribe to your blog, and I think it's important because you have incredible insight, so you have a lot of experience, you're seeing stuff, and by registering to that, you're becoming kind of a thought leader on that. I think it's important to find mentors that are going to complete you on aspect that you're not necessarily comfortable with. So my first best practice is to get mentor and get people complete yourself. And the other one is get other interests. For me, sometimes it's easy with the overloaded agenda and everything to start doing just IT. For me, it's fundamental for example, I really like Tai Chi, and it's important for me to have my family, personal time, and everything. And this balance is really capital. And I have one of my sensei used to say, if you don't have half an hour to meditate in a day, then you need to take 1 hour. And I think this is important, and that's one of my personal best practices.
So in terms of your best practices, you talked about mentoring and then having other interests, and it sounds like martial arts and your family are part of that. So just sort of drilling down further onto the mentoring side, who do you consider to be some of your key mentors that you've had in your life?
I had several. You had the formal mentor, so people that you sit with and get feedback. So you just do stuff and work with them. So I had several mentors when I was back in IBM. Mainly people that when I want to develop a skill, I find someone that have it that can accompany me on that. So I had some mentor on. I had one guy named Marcel Demers was a mentor that I used to have. Claude Place. It was and sometimes even mentor were not necessarily. You could have a mentor with a new person that come in. If you have one skill that you don't have that you want to have a company with, so that's the way I do my stuff. And then you have your informal mentor. So the mentor, the thought leader. So for example, I was talking about the blog post, so then you become one of my mentor. But then after that, yeah, I have Scott Guthrie, I have Scott Anselman, I have Don Ferguson. So there's several person like that I admire their way and just read their stuff and learn from their learning.
You know, with all of the experiences you have in terms of your work as an architect advisor and really quite an expert in this area, what do you think are the five little known but essential tips?
For my point of view, I think what's really important is networking. Networking, it's the most important thing. I think that as an architect, mainly, you cannot know anything. And no one can put the space shuttle in space alone. The architect is really dependent on its ecosystem. So I think networking, knowing people that can complete you, is really important. And this, I would say, is one other essential tip. Complete yourself, not clone yourself. And I see several examples of team that assemble by affinity. Let's say we love the same thing. It's just when we want to achieve a project, you don't want to have people that all think the same, because you're not going to be covering everything. So you need to complete yourself. There is several good examples of that that are really good and success. If you look, Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer, that's a very good example of completing yourself. I have another example of another little entrepreneur near where I live. He's owner of a major company, but he got assistance by people that complete him, that are way different, but complete him. So I feel like that when I'm, that's something I think essential. I think something really essential, and I learned back when I was at IBM, when I got hired at IBM, is be constructive. It's, if you want a little anecdote on, and I learned that I was quite young, I was sharing an apartment with one of my friend, my best friend, and we're pretty much have the same career. So the same, and in fact, we were printing the same CV back at the time. Okay, we're talking university. We were printing the same CV on the same paper, the same printer, because we worked on the same restaurant, the same thing. The only thing that changed on the CV was the name. And that's the reason why the guy at IBM met us both, because he said, what is this? He said, two CV, the same exact thing. So he wanted to see us. And after that, he told me that for the same exact CV, he asked the same question, and only the attitude. So I was constructive. He asked, what did you learn when you were working at the restaurant there? We all know that working in a restaurant is hard. But I was, I learned this, and I'm, by personality, more optimist and constructive. So I was like that. And it seems that my friend was the reverse. And that struck my manager at the time that hired me. And it struck me after when he explained that. But I think it's really a strong differentiator. I see that in team. Essential tip, be constructive. Don't be whine about stuff. It's just be constructive. Something that another essential tip is assume that large group of person, when they do decision or some stuff, assume that there is no dumbness. Assume that there is, globally, society is bright. Because globally, so if there is a reason for something is like that, it's just not dumb, and it seems easy sometimes. Oftentimes I saw in designing system, that process, let's say business process, where people, IT person would complain about an IT process and say, that's dumb, that have no reason to be. But at the end, there is tons of lawyers and people that thought of that process. And at the end, it's just assume that there is reason for everything, so try to understand. So I think it's important. And I probably lastly, but I think most importantly, is have fun. That's my personal, for me, and I it's just, it's selfish. For me, it's, I really tend toward internal balance. And having fun and knowing myself, and it's just so important. I see so many people just talking about raise, but I know that this is not what they want. If you get a raise, it's going to be good for a couple of months, but after that you're going to become, it's, you need to know yourself and be in the well position and having fun. And I think when you have fun, you're successful, and then you're having more fun. So I think it's really essential.
Well, those are really great tips. It sounds like in your networking side, you're really talking about connecting with community and community groups and other people, because you can get a lot of ideas from them. And when you're completing yourself, really to avoid groupthink, where everybody's sort of thinking the same way, it's from diversity that you can generate new ideas and so forth. And then when you talk about being constructive, it sounds like looking at things as opportunities, looking at challenges in your life or hard work in your life as opportunities and being positive. And then you also talked about sort of things happening globally in a positive way, and that there's good thinking often when you're working on projects in a global sense. And then finally, when you're talking about having fun, it sounds like you're really putting a focus on having balance in somebody's life. So those are great tips.
Yeah. In fact, if you want another little story, when I joined Microsoft, and I had one question I asked everybody. It was one single question, and I asked that to the VP of MSDN. The only question I was asking is, are you having fun? And that was the question, because I know that if I work with people having fun, and then I'm going to... The climate is going to be good. I'm going to have fun. I'm going to complete my... So I was asking, are you having fun? It was incredible when you look at the eyes of the people when you ask that question. I always remember the eyes of my VP. He just leaned back in his chair, and his eye became with light, and he start, we do this and that, and then you feel the passion and the fun, and for me, I knew this is where I want to be. So, that's a little anecdote on that.
You know, what do you think are the most important current roadmap level tips involving solution architecture?
This is really interesting. This is really a very good question. From my point of view, architect is at the same time the best job and the worst job. It's the most awkward job in our industry, and the profile we have there is you feel it when you see a large audience of architect that you really have two classes of architect. When you're an architect, you're on one side at the top of the food chain, the technical food chain. So you're really managing project and structure, but you're really at the top of the IT food chain. But at the same time, you're at the bottom of the business chain. So you can see yourself as a low executive or a high IT staff. And depending on the way you approach things, it's changing stuff. And for me, I really see it. And I try, I think, roadmap level, I think for solution architect is really, especially for solution architect, I think that the infrastructure architect are mostly on the other side. Solution architect, you really need to be in the middle. So a roadmap is really something between business and IT. So I think governance and business aspect and having understanding the business way of thinking. I was talking about large group of people are intelligent. Understand business, understand their need, understand why they don't trust IT, for example. Understand the major trend on demographics, so your workforce, your people. I always say that architecture is nothing put out of context. So that's a little bit the way I see it. And when you're doing architecture, even let's say, for example, you have, you say, oh, for example, .NET, we're going to do this system, but you have no .NET developer. You're out of context. You need to be able to put in context, to know the major trend, know your enterprise, know your demographic, know your business user. So that's, I would say, some roadmap level tip for more business side. So that I would say MDA, model-driven architecture, way of thinking to model, that's really bringing towards service orientation. It's a step toward that. And I think model-driven architecture, service orientation, portfolio management, application lifecycle management, everything around that is really some stuff that you really need to be aware of as a solution architect to be able to bring those two worlds together.
Now, taking that prior question, can you apply it to the next, let's say, 3 years?
I would say that it's always get current with the business. I say that the big trend, I would say, the for a solution architecture level is S plus S, I would say, for the next year. And I would say trend in general, we were talking about SOA as a componentization. We kind of got a little bit in the way. Software as a service, I think information become the IT core asset, and information architecture is something really key for the future. I think it's the strategic asset, the differentiator for enterprise. Having S plus S to deliver services, software as a services, based around this information that allow backing up the information, auditability, guaranteeing the quality of the information and everything. So I think that's really information architecture, SaaS and S+S, and at the other spectrum, collaboration, the way people Web 2.0. I think that's something that really we need to get into as architect to understand that.
You know, what do you feel are the most important broader IT and business challenges and solutions for this year?
I wish I had this the broader. I wish I had the solution to that. I think IT and business, in a sense, and it's like men and women. The story it's kind of. I think it's two. I think one word, collaboration, and it's really. It's. I think this is where we're not really there. I think it's one of the biggest challenges. Collaboration. Business would see IT as typical business. Would not see IT as a strategic asset. They would see IT as people that that try to slow the business. And IT see business as dumb user. And it's I simplify it. But I think it's all about collaboration, and I think it's the biggest challenge. It's currently I see two loneliness kind of talking together, and the success, the business where that are gonna have success are the business where IT is gonna become a strategic asset, a differentiator, not a driver, a strategic asset. So I think it's the biggest challenge now.
I see. So I see really one of the biggest challenges is about business and IT working together, collaborating, and working towards ensuring business opportunities, and those are met by having IT as a strategic asset.
Yep, exactly.
You know, there's a lot of churn in the industry. There's a lot of change. So what advice would you give to IT professionals who want to stay on top of what is happening in the industry in order to position themselves and their organization to benefit from these trends?
I would say it come back to what we were discussing a little bit. I think be informed, be curious, so you know the trends and you see them coming. So read blogs, like subscribe to your blogs. And go everywhere and global information. So read. I would say that have fun. I would say that I always come back to that, but I think that is really crucial for a career if you want to be happy and successful. So have fun. Be honest to yourself. Know yourself. Find challenge and address them constructively. I think it's important. I think that. I think that if you look, sometimes we tend to look more kind of punctually, and sometimes it can be discouraging. But there's an old wisdom adage that say every large quest started by a single footstep. I don't know if the translation in English is proper, but meaning that just do the first step, and then after that, every 2 miles run start by a step.
You know, in your current role, what do you find are the biggest challenges and their solutions? That is, in your day-to-day job.
My current role, communication. Communication is the first challenge, and it's that's really the strongest challenge. For what I think, because I really communication is really you're limiting. You have an idea that is complex, and you have a background that is forming this idea, and you want to exchange that to someone that may. And it's communicating with someone with other background. So this same idea you're projecting through words is going to be reflected in another dimension in his thinking. Oh, I don't know if you saw the picture of two people talking, and one say, "We need a house," and you see the thinking a little house, and you see the other person is saying, "I agree," and you see the huge cottage with three garage. So, and I think communication is really all about that. Making sure that, because it's the basis of all conflict, and so it's my first challenge. After that, it's collaboration. It's collaboration means sharing information. So, and then collaboration have a large sense. And from my history, I used to go in teams that were not going well. Okay, so when I arrive in a team, you could see there is really two way: the coach way or the military way. And for me myself, I really prefer the coach way. So I try to get in the team, bring my own value to them, get the value from them. Build, but it's a collaboration. So everybody need, it's a give and take. So everybody, it's a win-win. Everybody need to win. So collaboration is really a big challenge because people try to, you see, information is everything sometimes. So people, you need to find a way to optimize that. So that's a big one. I would say that one other challenge is religion in technology. You have, oftentimes I arrive, and mainly in my history, because I come from G2E, and now I work mainly with .NET, although I do G2E today too. But you find people that are religious about choice like that. They just, .NET is not good, or and G2E is not good. I think we need to go beyond that, and this religion stuff is really a big challenge in my day-to-day role. And that the funny thing is that my official title for inside Microsoft is architect, evangelist, solution. So, and then you see that this tied back to religion. So that's really interesting.
I see. So you see conflicts between sort of the Java people and sort of the .NET people, and sometimes they get too infixed into a particular silo almost, and they don't communicate perhaps or collaborate to the sort of the greater interest of the enterprise.
They are not open to that. So sometimes, and it's not all. And that was really funny. If when I changed it, it was really funny. Half of the people said I saw the light, and half of the people I said I joined the dark side. It was, and a lot of people, it's just not black or white. And I think not all people, but I think that in each side, there is some religious people that are just not open at all of the value of the other. And I think that the both together is where you have the most value.
Because of your travels, because of your ability to talk to and communicate and collaborate with so many people, you must have some really interesting stories to share with us. Perhaps something surprising or unexpected, amazing or humorous from all your works.
I have several. I have several stories that comes. There is one story that really influenced my way of my move toward from IBM to Microsoft, and it was all on the launch. So we were our team on the launch, and you know that we were offsite on a dinner. I say lunch. It's the French. I mix those names with French, but it's the dinner, the evening meal. We were there. And having, and you know that when we're having a dinner like that with a little bit of wine and beer, we solve every problem in the world. So I was there with the team, and we start talking about the problem in business. So what's the problem? Why? And at one point, it became really the problem was that business was lacking governance, and IT should rule them all. So that And then the debate started, and I was debating with that, and that was a very, very funny lunch around that. It ended up that it's where I made my idea that IT should not rule the world, but you need communication. But that was a funny one. Another funny thing I think when I travel, having my background, is always this light, dark side, light side. And what's really, I would say, funny on that is that when I was back in university, I used to be a big gamer on the web, and my name back at the time, I was a Star Wars fan, and my name, my gamer tag was Darth Quimper. And a lot of, so, and Darth Quimper is there since since the beginning of Hotmail. And when I left IBM, a lot of people said, oh yeah, okay, right, so Dark Quimper, and they thought I just chose that because my change, but It was not. It was a name. But you could see that there's always this in the room. Half of them see dark. Half of them see light. So that's really funny. And I could say that one last story that I'm really happy and that I would say that's a great story. I don't know if you probably aware that we had for the first time Pattern and Practice Summit in Canada. It was held in Quebec City in April. Beginning of May, sorry. And the Pattern and Practice Summit coming to Quebec City, it was for us a big event, and Quebec City is where I am. So we're preparing that, and we're stressed because we're working with Keith back in Redmond, and Keith is asking, are we going to have audience? And we're saying, oh, and we're stressed on that. We may have 75 person, and we were stressed on the fact that can we have audience? So we reserve a small room and hope to get 75 person. And then when the registration opened, we went, and it ended up that 75 was sold out before the early rate. So it was sold out in not even a month. And so we were proud. But then after that, the PNP said, oh, my God, so that we sold every ticket under on that. So it was really funny. So we had some people, and end up that we were having a lot too many people in the venue at the end. But that was a very interesting thing to set up that in Quebec. So thinking, are we going to have people coming to Quebec City to attend the PNP summit? And in fact, we had this. We had around 130 person that came, full capacity room. And we had what a brain power we got there. So we had several person. We were talking about mentor, but we had some Microsoft executives, some people from the industry. We had Billy Hollis was there. So it was really that was really good. Was a very interesting story.
Yeah, Joao, compare, due to your amazing background, I'd like you now to look into your crystal ball and provide your predictions of future IT and business trends and their implications and opportunities.
Oh, okay. It's my guess from what I see as current trend, and I'm by no means just stuff I see and I read. I'm very interested into that topic too, because I think it's really important for us to plan our profession. First thing I see is really we have a problem into it's outside IT, but we have and I think I when you did the presentation at CSAF, it was very good on that. But we really feel that there is a shortage of resource. Not even we see it inside IT, but in schools and everywhere we have a shortage, and we have less and less resource. And they're more and more pervasive, and that's and for me that's a major trend. Implication is that we're just overloaded. We're missing people. We're having stuff going overseas. We kind of don't control that, but it's going to get worse and worse. We really need to do something on having good talent interested into our profession, and I think that's one trend that is something we need to do. Another big trend I see inside an enterprise, and this is because of the probably the internet era or the office that came and everything. I see that every kid that come out from an accounting school or whatever or an engineering school, they know VBA or they know developing an office better than any IT folks that typically come from an IT school, and they develop an office. It's incredible. And you have people aware of internet and mashup, and they develop their stuff, and they're used to Facebook, and this generation that is coming is savvy, ambitious, and then doesn't want to work 80 hours a week, and have humongous impact into an organization, and that's going to be going more and more because those people develop their own solution. So and we really see to, we really I see it. From my point to, we need to pass in perception. It's all a matter of perception, and I see we need to pass from perception from provider or fulfiller to enabler for those person, and that's where the challenge comes. And I think it's a big trend. Also, there is several more IT trend, business IT trend. There is virtualization, automation, service orientation. It's huge. We have computing in the cloud, software plus services. You have unified communication. So enterprise search. You have it's huge. That's trend that are really coming, and we really have need to have a global view on all those. I think that in all those, the opportunity is for IT to position itself as a strategic asset through collaboration and communication. I think it's something that's really important for in the work I do.
You know, you've discussed a lot of different areas, and it's hard sometimes for the IT practitioner to keep up. What are your top recommended resources and why?
Top resources are blogs. Blogs, it's incredible. You find some, I was talking about mentoring, but you find some people that are subject matter expert or thought leader into area that you're interested in, and you register there. And then you just follow them. Blog are incredibly valuable in that. So just to keep on the loop. So like, for example, your blog or Scott Guthrie blog is incredible. So, and that's, to stay ahead, that's something very good. Also, if you want to be more global, I find that the Architectural Journal, available on I think MSDM, is very valuable too. Always have a team. It's all a very well done paper on architectural impact, and it's really well done. I find that it's a real good publication. I it's one of the only paper publication like that I read cover to cover. I think Channel 9, we're talking about blog, but Channel 9 and podcast and that is pretty good too, because I think we're talking about time. You need balance, and for me, I'm using mass transit, so I'm using buses, commute, and I think that those podcasts it's incredible. I just put that on my device in the bus, and I can look in the bus to podcasts. And that's incredible, because you use this time, you just learn some stuff, have fun, take some personal podcasts too, and that I think is good. Channel 9 is impressive for that. It's a place where I get stuff. Another place, talking about podcasts, but RadioCanada.ca, the French equivalent of CBC, is a place where I download a lot of podcasts. There is a program in the middle at noon that is around a discussion on big political trend and could have impact. So I love to listen to those, because it's really major for the entire society, but it's important. So that's something I look to. I'll register to the Journal Les Affaires or stuff like that, Business Week, stuff like that. I think is good. And one other is the Developer Works from IBM too, is good, very good. Red Books, that's good too, but it's more technical. But I think that's, and other people, networking.
So on the some of the resources that you mentioned, then I guess we can use Live Search to search for the Microsoft Architect Journal, links for Channel 9 and their podcasts, Radio Canada, Developer Works, and so on.
Oh yeah, we could. And in fact, it's simple. Architectural Journal, it's thearchitecturejournal.net, or you can have it from MSDN architecture section. Channel 9 is channel9.msdn, if I'm not mistaken. After that, radiocanada.ca is radio-canada.ca. But most of those, yeah, you can find easily.
Okay, that's good. You know, we're near the close of our interview, and I always finish with this kind of a question, and that is, if you can provide commentary on any topics of your choosing, or we can reframe it this way: if you were to do the interview, what questions would you ask? What answers would you provide?
Oh, what question would I ask to myself or to you?
To yourself.
Okay, to myself, because I would like to do the same kind of. I would like to ask you some of those questions to myself. What question would I like to ask myself? I think I really think that you got really good question. That I think that we need to ask question around we need to think business. That's, I think it's imperative. And I think that a lot of your question were talking about that, the trends and everything. It's really important for my point of view. So it's really how can we make IT a strategic asset? And that's a global question I ask everybody. It's how can we become a strategic asset? And I think that's really the major question. And I think there are several answers. I think this interview we talked, but I think it's a major topic for us for the future.
Well, Joao, compare, you know, we will continue to follow your significant contributions both nationally and internationally. You have an incredible reputation. You are a recognized authority in solution architecture, and we appreciate the fact that you took the time to share your wisdom, your time, and your insights with us. So thank you again for coming in today to do this interview.
Oh, it's too much honor. I think I really thank you, because I really admire the work you're doing. In fact, I really admire the work you're doing, and I think you're doing very, very important work for our industry. I think, and for me, it's an honor. So, and I recommend to everybody, probably everybody that would listen to this would already do, but you need to register to your blog.
And let's continue.
Thank you to give me some time today.
And let's continue to do maybe a blog series.
Yeah, we could.
Okay, thank you again for taking the time.
Thank you.